Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. Thank you for joining me for today's SMIE Consulting Midweek Roundup. My name is Marty Bennett, your host, and today we'll be covering three topics in international education news that crossed our feeds in the last few days, and bringing you our perspective on how this may impact what we do in international education here in the United States. Now, for those unfamiliar with Education USA, And with what I've been doing since I left Education USA, I set up my own consulting business to help universities and organizations get a better sense of what's happening in international education and how they might be able to adapt what they do to help improve their international education strategies in terms of student enrollment and such. So we set out five years ago now, with SMIE Consulting to begin helping institutions and organizations improve what they do through our analysis and years of experience in the field. And we bring together a variety of different tools to help institutions get ahead. This midweek roundup is certainly one of those. I started this last summer to help give current takes on what's going on in international education and how institutions might be able to respond accordingly. What we do today through this midweek roundup is cover three topics each week. We also have these videos archived on our Facebook page as well as available for playback on our YouTube channel for SMIE Consulting. And for those who prefer listening to podcasts rather than watching me for a half an hour, I certainly understand that, and we do podcast this on all major platforms from iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify, and Podbean. So please look us up there if you're not already. For purposes of this midweek roundup, we take each of the stories that we cover here from our newsletter that comes out on Monday mornings each week, and that is the SMIE Consulting e-news, and we call it All the SMIE News Fit to Share. Now, SMIE, if you're wondering, is Social Media and International Education Consulting, my two areas of expertise. And what we do each week through the newsletter on Monday mornings, we send out both international ed and social media news stories that are of particular interest. And then we follow up on three of those more in depth on the Wednesday edition of the Midweek Roundup that you're watching now. And what we're going to do today is cover three main topics. For those of you who are wanting to get a hold of this, we have an archive available on our education on the SMIE Consulting website, smieconsulting.org, and the variety of services that we do offer, as well as free resources to institutions, are available there. And then we also, again, as I mentioned earlier, we make this available in podcast version. For those who would like this as a later resource who can't watch it live. Now, when we talk about the first topic today, the University of Farmington, this is one that is we've covered obviously since it broke in January, has been a major story that a lot of folks in international education are concerned about. Certainly, this happened back, a similar story happened back in 2016, when University of North New Jersey rolled up a number of bad actors who were bringing students to the United States for pay-to-stay schemes that where they weren't actually attending classes, they were paying to do CPT from the first day of class, and this is what University of Farmington did as well. Through the Department of Homeland Security. And we know that both in the North New Jersey case as well as with the Farmington case, the greater majority of students that were rolled up in this scheme that were lured into these institutions were of Indian origin, and as were a number of the bad actors who were recruiting them to come to these institutions. So those seemed to be the target in the first campaign with the University of North New Jersey, but with the bad actors that were doing the initial organizing. And those were the initial people reported with this Farmington case. They were the initial people that were rounded up as well. However, there were about 130 students that were affected by this that were attending at the time, were attending the University of Farmington, which actually opened in 2015 under the previous administration. So, as was North New Jersey. But the focus of the news media was certainly on how these 129 of the 130 or so that were students affected were of Indian origin. And the news story I've just posted the link to in the comments section on the Facebook page is actually something that's come out, again, 2 to 3 months after the story broke. It was actually authorities at the Indian Embassy have said that students from India are advised to exercise their due diligence before seeking admission into American universities. And this certainly is something that I think is endemic in India, unfortunately, because there's so many talented students there that are seeking better opportunities for themselves and their families, that unfortunately there are a proportion that are looking for the quickest, easiest way to get there, to work, and to stay. And they have fallen afoul of these two sting operations in the last 3 years. And that's had an impact, a chilling impact, some would say, in some circles of Indian students coming to the United States. Certainly, the academically qualified students can attend normally any U.S. College and university that they're admitted to. But here, the alarm bells clearly indicate that the students that fell into these two traps, they weren't hearing those alarm bells going off because they were being advised improperly by either bad actors who were just getting them there, getting their fees from the students as they placed them at scam universities or sham universities like Farmington in North New Jersey, or they were just ignoring those alarm bells. Certainly, those alarm bells would have been gone off if they had been working with credible in-country actors like Education USA that could help explain to these students that this was certainly not the way things operate. And this is part of the problem, really. The article actually goes on to comment on what the ambassador is saying is the Indian ambassador to the United States. This is saying that these students need to be more thorough in their research. The spokesman at the Indian Embassy said, in order to ensure that Indian students do not fall into such traps, their words, it is advised that due diligence be exercised while seeking admission in U.S. institutions. The fact that a university is duly accredited by relevant U.S. authorities, such as its inclusion in the SEVP, Student Exchange Visitor Program, is not an assurance in itself about a bona fides of a university, the advisory says. So I think that this is the Indian Embassy's statement here regarding what students need to be doing. And it's a sad state of affairs that just because an institution is in SEVP does not mean they're a good institution. And certainly that's part of our problem as a country, frankly. We don't have a national system of accreditation for traditional nonprofit education institutions. We allow a wide swath of for-profits to operate with little or no supervision through a lot of accrediting bodies that are should be under much more stringent regulations than they currently are. And frankly, it's our own fault that these institutions exist, and our government's fault, frankly, that these institutions exist. And the challenge that we see here with a lot of what is happening with DHS, they have dramatically expanded their enforcement mechanism. HSI is Homeland Security Investigations, is the unit of ICE that are part of ICE that does carry out a lot of the investigations, and in this case, were the ones conducting the University of North New Jersey and University of Farmington. So there's real challenges involved here in the way our system is set up. And certainly trying to catch bad actors that are trying to place students is certainly something that should be a priority. But also probably a more important priority is that eliminating the kind of institutions like Farmington and North New Jersey from existence. And the challenge is these institutions existed before these kinds of institutions that are visa shams that are visa mills, just trying to get students into the country in pay-to-stay schemes. They've existed for years, and it's the government's inaction on both sides of the aisle, frankly, with the Homeland Security, where priorities have been on terrorism and other Homeland Security issues. Certainly, they've not been on what we in higher ed know are true problems if for international students as they look to evaluate their options in the United States. So one piece of the puzzle here and an important element in the Farmington scandal was the use of Facebook profiles in communications with students. And certainly ICE had used fake Facebook profiles, as the article I've just posted the link to, they used fake Facebook profiles to prosecute these students and then the bad actors. The article is focusing on what ICE, what Facebook's lack of oversight of their platform and their own rules that say inauthentic behavior or fake accounts are not allowed on our platform, and they were never closed. So I think this is really part of the larger issue. So I link these two stories just because they are obviously connected because of the issues involved here. And I think part of why there's been such a strong reaction to this is, frankly, this is what we're talking about when social media platforms, we know how important that is and how particularly young people communicate today. And the trust that we place in our social media platforms is often overstated, or we rely too much on social media platforms for our information. And that's a real challenge. In the case of these students, fake accounts were set up to represent Farmington officials, and that was used as part of the enticement to get these students in. So certainly something that we want to keep our eye on as this develops and how we look at things like Farmington and the role of Homeland Security in these kinds of sting operations to trap students and certainly the bad actors, I certainly understand. But for too long, the students have been the scapegoats, and it's sad that it comes to that. What we'll do now is shift gears a bit to the other, not elephant in the room, but certainly the number one player on the world stage, not just in the United States when it comes to international students coming to our country, but also to many other countries around the world, is China. And I want to really give a proper shout out to the folks at WES with their World Education News and Reviews. They've put together a really fantastic a report on China and how China shapes global mobility trends. And this article is very well done and certainly covers a lot of ground and focuses mostly on what China is doing and has done to become, by their numbers, the number three host country of international students in the world. So, and doing it in a much more diversified way than we do here in the United States for that, when you look at the numbers. In China, South Koreans represent the largest single source of students, whereas in the U.S., Chinese students are upwards of 30 to 35% of students, international students in the United States. In China, South Korean students, the largest demographic there, represent only 16%. The next largest country is the U.S. at 5% of their international students. Thailand, and no other country has more than 5% other than the U.S., Thailand, and South Korea. Every other country that is represented in China are 4% or less. So what is this? How has this happened that China has risen in the rankings? According to Project Atlas, and this is where they're getting their data for this West report, that they are closing the distance between themselves and the United Kingdom, the second top host country, from a gap of 188,000 students in 2011 to just 58,000 students in 2017. So if they continue on along this trajectory, the report says China will overtake the UK for the number two spot within the next 2 or 3 years. And We've talked about these Project Atlas numbers and some other conflicting reports that Australia was actually the number three country. Project Atlas certainly seems to indicate that China is now that number three country and may soon be the number two recipient of international students. How has China developed this? Certainly, we all know about the students that they send abroad. If you look across Europe and across most English-speaking countries in the world, Chinese students represent the number one or number two country of origin for students studying there. For China, a lot of their growth, obviously they have higher ed capacity, have had higher ed capacity issues in terms of where their students have gone. They can't all get places at the top schools in China, so they naturally are starting, have been looking abroad probably for undergraduate places, certainly since the mid-2000s. And now, whereas previously it had all been just on the graduate side, but now we're seeing undergraduates and graduates going globally. And that's part of their expansion, their soft power initiatives that they've been using quite successfully. Another one, probably less known in international ed circles, that helps contribute to this is the BRI, or Belt and Road Initiative. It used to be called One Belt, One Road. And it's really been an infrastructure, trade, and investment links to rebuild the Silk Road and expand it, frankly, and into areas it never had been previously. It's a kind of a what the Silk Road Economic Belt and the new Maritime Silk Road. So it's a massive program. It's there, and the West Report details much more about the BRI than I'll go into here. But certainly this, their official site for this Belt and Road Initiative is lists 130 countries that are affiliated with BRI. Now that, and they don't list what all those 130 nations are, but they are certainly ones they've had, it's an approximately in US dollars, $900 billion in allocated funds that's been focusing on these kind of infrastructure projects, building roads, the One Road Project in many countries, building airports and other main infrastructure ports, as well as bases, military bases. That's been a piece of their expansion through BRI. So what it really is just a phenomenally large investment that the Chinese government has made in building its economic ties with the rest of the world in areas that they're using to develop their own strategic interests. So that's helped a lot of countries that have been direct recipients of this Chinese aid have now been turning their sights, maybe not as much towards the United States as they maybe once were. And a great example of this is in Kenya. And with the recent visit by the Kenyan ambassador to the United States, a recent talk by the Kenyan ambassador, where he actually challenges the United States to match Chinese investment and promote people-to-people exchanges. So that may seem a little odd, but the ambassador Robinson Njeru Gitte addressed the French Alliance in Midtown in Atlanta, and then at the Capital City Club, to asserting that Africans currently favor development partnerships to fulfill their own dreams of economic advancement. And they point to a lot of what China has done, and they mentioned in this article President Xi Jinping's Belt and Road Initiative that includes quite significant investment in Africa. And that is reflective of their ambitions, frankly. And the ambassador to the U.S. is certainly encouraging the United States to really pay attention to this and see this as the way the U.S. can regain a foothold in Africa in particular. So I think there's obvious overlaps here in terms of how things have developed. With not only higher education, but also economic development. Those two go hand in hand for China, at least how China sees it. U.S., again, because we don't have an international education policy, and it doesn't tie in necessarily to national security interests directly. It's only been through Reports like what NAFSA produces on the economic impact statements and what now Commerce Department is doing as well that share that information. And so I think that for many folks, these issues are not, from a U.S. perspective, are not the same. But in reality is they are so vital to how China is approaching the world and in terms of building their influence. State Department certainly believes its people-to-people exchanges are very much a part of what they do in terms of promoting mutual understanding and public diplomacy that they mission that they have. But the economic piece is not as significant a driver there from the State Department perspective. Understandably, it's not in their mission, but there is no overarching policy and really driving force that connects the dots economically and public diplomacy-wise and foreign policy-wise to what we do in international ed. So until that happens, we will be at a disadvantage compared to competing nations that are making the efforts. Certainly China has gone under the radar for many years now on that front in terms of becoming a destination for international students, not just a sender. So I think there's a lot we can learn from how China is doing things. One thing I think that there's still a lot of chapters to be written yet on how that relationship develops. And Zanetta, thank you very much for joining. I hope all is well with you. I'm glad to see you back on the live chat. And last piece I'll leave you with is actually a very interesting guest post on Inside Higher Ed. It's called Beyond the Melting Pot, International Students on Campus. And posting the link to that story now in the comments section. This Inside Higher Ed story, really, it's from a PhD student named Santiago Castillo Gutierrez. And Santiago is a PhD candidate for study of higher education at the University of Arizona. His focus is really on what internationalization, higher ed internationalization strategies need to be, the quantum leaps that are required. This is actually from Teichler, that there are three quantum leaps regarding the development of internationalization strategies, moving from vertical cooperation to relationships on equal terms, from a set of activities towards systematic policies and strategies, and three, from disconnected initiatives towards an integrated comprehensive strategy. And I think that's the first parts of each of those are certainly where I think the lion's share of U.S. institutions find themselves when they talk about internationalization. It's usually talked about in, well, we have so many countries represented here and we send students to so many countries. There's really not a comprehensiveness to what they do in internationalization or how they talk about it. So this student's perspective is really one that I think is great food for thought, and I encourage all of my colleagues to read this, is that an internationalization strategy will not be complete if it does not invest the same effort expended on attracting international students towards developing competencies needed to cultivate intercultural and multicultural communities. So internationalization at home, this is again from the article, and internationalization of the curriculum help create awareness not only among students but also among faculty and staff so that they'll value international students for more than economic or academic contributions. And he finishes with, our diverse identities can help steer the campus climate from a place that is open to learning from international students instead of one that is just teaching us. And it's really, this obviously is from an international student perspective, and that's where his focus is. But I think the points are really well taken in terms of where U.S. institutions are really falling flat in their internationalizing efforts in terms of how they talk about it, how integrated it is, and how comprehensive what they do is in relation to all parts of what internationalization means, from inbound and outbound students to faculty to curriculum to a variety of other pieces of the puzzle that don't get talked about enough as part of the same concern. And I think that's really something that I think the more U.S. institutions can do to integrate what they do on all things international, not just inbound students, or just study abroad really is what will make the U.S. a much more attractive, and institutions much more attractive and efficient in how they do what they do internationally. So that's what I have for you today in terms of content for the midweek roundup. What I would encourage you to do is, if you have haven't seen these recent midweek roundups, the archive of these is available on our Facebook page in the video section, but also on our YouTube channel. The playlist for midweek roundups is there. But to certainly check out the podcasts, if you still would like to or prefer to listen rather than watch me, I certainly appreciate that. But really, I'm encouraged today to really see what you want to have covered during these roundups. Again, I'm finding these news stories each week and sharing them here, but I know that there are others out there that may be more of interest to you. And I certainly want to make sure I respect what your interests are as well as we go through this journey together. One last thing I'll leave you with is our website for smieconsulting.org. Please check out the resources there. As I mentioned, there are a variety of free resources for universities and colleagues who are looking to gain that extra competitive advantage, as well as services that we can provide to your institutions in terms of social media strategies, website audits for international content, as well as long-term strategic planning, as well as recruitment and placement initiatives. So happy to consult with any of you on that front and field your questions as we go along. But thanks for joining me this week, and we look forward to catching up with you again soon at a conference near you. Cheers.